Sir, why did you wait until the last minute to pay your taxes?
Taxes? Isn't this the line from Metallica?
Sir, why did you wait until the last minute to pay your taxes?
Because I'm an idiot. Happy?
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Our friend Louis Sands is here, 712 now, and appreciate you taking a couple of minutes away from the office, but I'm guessing you're happy to keep me out of the office.
That's right. My pleasure. It's a bit of a field trip for me right now.
What's the name of the office?
Sikich, headquartered in Naperville, S-I-K-I-C-H.
And how's business? Through the roof?
Very busy this time of year, and we're typically busy this time of year, but ever since basically the end of last year with the new tax law and everything, we've pretty much been going full bore for a couple months now.
Let me start there. So a lot of us paid our property taxes ahead by New Year's Eve, with the idea being that next year, we're this tax year for next year, we won't be able to deduct them. What do we know from the IRS? Are they going to be okay, and how do we handle it?
Two very different questions. You probably wouldn't have been able to deduct because you would have been limited to $10,000. So the idea being that between your personal income tax and your real estate tax, you're going to be far in excess. So I'll try and pay it early, assuming I'm not in the alternative minimum tax. I might get a break, or you know, I definitely won't next year. The IRS hasn't necessarily come down and said, yes, you've got our blessing on this. But they, you know, if you recall, people were going to pay their individual taxes first, and then they came back and said no on that.
Well, how are you supposed to handle it now? Because you got to file for people, hundreds and hundreds of people by next week who I'm sure did this.
We just have to do the best that we can. If they've got, you know, there were certain local areas where they said if it was paid and paid before the year end and it was assessed and ascertainable, then you can try to take the deduction. And you know, the key, Steve, is to have communication with your clients, because it's not as black and white as you'd like it to be.
But why wouldn't the IRS have ruled on this by now? You guys should have had a ruling on this a month ago, 2 months ago.
The last time, back in 1986, that they overhauled the tax code, it took 11 or I think 13 months to do.
It's just ridiculous.
They did it in 8 weeks this time, and that's it's not if they you know, cut some corners or missed some things. It's what was missed. And
this is the insanity of this, because when thousands and thousands of people, I'm sure it was over millions of people, lined up before New Year's Eve to pay their taxes in advance because they thought they would get an advantage, the IRS and somebody in the federal government should have stepped in and went, no. Or at least, we don't know, so don't stand in line.
Or we don't know, so do what you... The checks got cashed, I can promise you that.
Yeah, exactly.
And the thing is, you know, we start to hear some things from your local congressman saying that there's lobbyists, we're gonna protect these payments and whatnot. So really, you're in a position of take it with the possibility that it might get disallowed. Don't take it with the idea that it may be allowed and you have to go back and amend. So it's kind of, as long as you have communication with the client in advance. And
from an accountant standpoint,
it's difficult.
In many cases, you would take it, but you warn the client this may kick back.
That's right.
All right, got it. Other questions?
Okay, I wanted to ask about charitable contributions. What can be deducted now and how that's going to change next year? Because I know toward the end of the year, at least for me, and a lot of people do this, you make your donations to whether it be Salvation Army or whatnot. Will we be able to... Can we itemize that now? Can we do it next year? And donations, too. Can we take those off?
Yes, to answer all your questions.
Okay.
You probably want
Thank
some
you.
Detail on. The charitable contributions is one of the areas that was not negatively impacted by the new tax law. In fact, it doesn't necessarily apply to most people. It was actually made easier. You were previously limited to one half of your adjusted gross income for deductions. That's actually gone up to 60%. Doesn't hit most people, but still, that's one of the itemized deductions that still exists. That, you know, there really are no changes from 17 to 18 in terms of what's a qualified deduction. You donations, I think you probably mean like Goodwill. It's the same. It's the same standard.
Special
it's got to be
Olympics,
in,
things
without
like
a doubt. Yeah. It's got to be in. If it's non-cash, it's got to be in good working, you know, good condition, and you've got to assess the fair market value of it. That's an area where people are. It's often abused. You know, I gave a suit away that was a $7,000 suit. No.
It's a really sweet suit.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's why I gave it away.
Dave.
Okay.
Well, I was going to ask about that, but also medical, because I never seem, thankfully, I don't have the kind of medical expenses that
the bar is so high.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, where is the bar now, and how do you get to it?
The bar is, first of all, it's just like charitables and mortgage interest for the most part. Deduction for medical expenses still exists. That didn't go away with the new tax law. You still, but you're, Steve, you have to clear 7.5% of your adjusted gross income before it starts being.
You got to be really sick.
Yeah.
Well, the idea is typically if you make any real amount of income and you have insurance, it's very difficult to get a deductible expense. If your income goes lower, or then if you start paying, you know, certain long-term care or premiums and things like that.
So that 7.5% needs to be out of pocket beyond what insurance pays.
If your adjusted gross income is $100,000 and it's got to be unreimbursed, the $7,501 is the first one that is deductible for you.
So there's not a lot of people, I would think, that would qualify for that.
No, but there, you know, where we do see a good amount of that is with some of our more elderly clients. You can, even if you're completely wealthy, it's not based on your net worth, it's based on your income. So if you've got pretty standard income, maybe just on Social Security, your income is lower, but that's typically when you're going to see your medical expenses, prescriptions, dental, all these things kind of fall into that bucket. We do have several clients that have it. And then one of the other things we talk about is grouping, for the lack of a better word. If it's, you know, November, December, these sorts of things, and you're nowhere near your limit, and you're thinking about doing something that would be a deduction, if you wait till next year, maybe if you can group those in, 19 would be a better year. I mean, to the extent you can't decide when you're going to have an emergency, but when you have any control over it, it's worth, you know, just planning a little bit.
Mary Vandeveld, John, we'll get you guys in here in just a second, but let me get to some text questions here. If you're getting a refund, do you have to file by the 16th? How long do you have to file?
If you're getting a refund,
you still have to file on time, right?
Well, I mean, you do. It's actually the 17th. You know,
that's a good point.
Don't tell anybody. Yeah. That. We want, let's assume it's the 15th if you want to. The fact is, the tax return is due on the 17th. If it's late, which is if you don't file or file for an extension, then there's penalties and interest, but those penalties and interest are based on the liability. So if you're getting $10,000 back, your penalties is, you know, whatever the number is, 5% of what you, if you don't owe anything, then it doesn't hurt you, except for the fact, I mean, if I told you I had $5,000 sitting in my house, come get it whenever you want, most people wouldn't wait a couple hundred days to do so. I mean, you should probably come get it, number one, just for obvious reasons, and then secondly, the number one way that we've been uncovering lately identity theft is through tax return filings. You try to file your return, the IRS says, we've already got it. No, you don't. Someone else filed a return on your behalf. If there's no reason to wait, short of procrastination, you're giving people more and more time to file a return under your or it's already been done, and that's that much longer before you flush it out.
Before you find out.
Yeah.
This is kind of specific. Wife has credit cards. Collection agency becomes involved. All three cards had partial balances forgiven. Those are taxed as income cumulatively or separately? Three cards, maybe a couple $100 on one, $500 on another, $300, maybe $1,000. Would it be the $1,000 or each card separately would be taxed?
It would be each card separately. The question is whether or not you would get a 1099 for that income. Typically, you won't get a 1099 until you clear like $600. So in theory, you could have $500 and you don't get a 1099 for it, and you're still supposed to report that income. That's the answer, but it's a lot more likely to be reported if there's a 1099 that's filed with the government and whatnot.
So much of this is the honor system.
Mm-hmm. And that's true. And typically around this time of year, the Pete Roses, the Imelda Marshall, the IRS will pick a high profile celebrity, Wesley Snipes, etc., where they'll go after them to make an example out of somebody, so that the rest of us fall in line. And you know, because there's no way, with however many hundreds of millions of people there are filing tax returns, that they have the resources or the time to within the 3-year statute of limitation to get it all, even computerized and whatnot. It's impossible.
But roll the dice. See if the IRS can catch you. We'll come back and do more in a second. Michael Zeldin is here. He works for Sikich and... Sikich?
No, just plain old Sikich. Sikich
Lewis
LLP.
Sands. What did I just call you?
Michael Zeldin.
I just called you Michael Zeldin. That's a guest in 20 minutes. I'm prepping ahead. 720.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Lightning round time. Lewis Sands is here. He's never even met Michael Zeldin. And Lewis is answering as many tax questions as possible. When you spend money to repair or purchase items for rental property, what percentage of the total price can you deduct?
Well, I would need more information.
There's no easy answer.
The answer is it's all going to be deductible at some point, whether or not you get to expense it all right now versus if it's a capital expense, more of a roof, like a roof repair, something that adds to the useful life, that may have to get depreciated over the course of time. But at some point, it's all going to be.
There's a new question. 309, if you live and work for a company out of the country, but you also make money on YouTube, do you pay American taxes for it?
Are you a U.S. citizen?
I am. I can't speak for this texter.
Michael, if you're a U.S. citizen, I don't care where you earn money. The U.S. government wants you to file it. And now there's foreign tax credits. So if you pay tax to a foreign, you know, YouTube, that's a good example. One of the other things that we're seeing a lot this year are these, what the kids are calling the side gigs, the Ubers.
Yeah.
That'd be a side hustle.
Thank you, Mary.
No problem.
The dog walkers. Whether or not you get a 1099, a W-2, a K-1, you're still support, you know, waitresses, many getting tips, you're supposed to pay tax on that.
If you get a 1099, you got to report it.
Without a doubt. If you don't get a 1099, you're still supposed to report.
Right. Honor system.
Right.
Deductions for child care, different now?
No.
Okay, so that's still solid?
No.
All right.
They still exist. That's great because there was a lot of talk that
they were going to go away.
They were going to go away.
810 area code, credit card cash back rewards income. I mean, it's got to be enough, right?
It's got to be a tech. I mean, technically, yes, but I mean, it's income. It's no different than gambling income. Now, again, there's the right answer, and then there's how do you typically try to quantify it and things like that. But you know, on the radio, cashback, absolutely, that's tax.
Yeah. K-1 comes up a couple times. Here are the questions: if nothing appears in Part 3 of a K-1 that I receive, do I have to file? And then there's this. We filed our taxes, getting a $5,000 refund after we got our K-1. What is a K-1?
A K-1 is what you would typically get from a partnership or an LLC. It's the equivalent of a W-2 if you're in a partnership.
Okay.
It shows your piece of the income.
We prepared our amendment after receiving the K-1, and now it reflects we owe $11,000. Do we wait for the $5,000 refund to be processed and then file, or meaning we only owe $6,000? How do we proceed?
That's a good question. Typically, you'd get this a couple months later after you would have already received the check, or perhaps if you would have applied your refund. It's seen, if you're going to amend your return, let's say you got $100,000 back and this was going to knock that down to 99, you still get the $100,000, you've got to pay in that extra one. It's seen separately and apart. So to answer your question, they still owe, what was it, the 11. They might want to technically wait until they get the 5 to ease the cash flow hit on it.
Yeah.
Net, they'll only owe 6, but they're not going to necessarily offset that if they've already got the check. Now, if they don't, they can also wait and see if they'll just hold, they won't just hold the check because they don't know that amended return is coming.
Ignorance of the law is not usually a defense. What about ignorance of tax rules?
Oh.
Can I get audited and go, I didn't know?
Sure, you can try. Yeah, and realistically, if you prepared your own tax return, that's a lot more likely to work. I mean, it's technically you owe, but then there's, you know, you can throw yourself on the mercy of whoever it is you're
just
talking
weep
to.
Openly.
Now, if you've got someone that is a paid taxpayer, it's a lot more difficult to.
Right.
I would have a harder time doing that than you would because it's what I.
Who does your taxes?
I do. Sickich LLP.
Well, filing a 1099-Q for college tuition in my daughter's name, get her a refund. She had zero income.
No.
Any money coming back to dad for that?
Right. I mean, the whole qualified tuition is a slippery slope. If people get scholarships, and then there's credits that you can get. There's work. There's lifetime learning credits. There's American Opportunity credits, and these sorts of things. But typically, it's capped. You can only do it for so many years, and it's limited by certain amounts of income. And
I didn't finish that other K-1. Did I? Part 3 of a K-1 shows nothing. Do I still have to file?
I'd have to be looking at a K-1 to see what Part 3 is. In general, if you get a K-1 and it doesn't have any of the bells and what the income numbers or
right.
You don't have to file if there's no numbers on it, but you probably want to, because just if you're looking at the interest, the capital gains, the income, there might not be numbers there, but you look a little deeper, there might be charitable contributions flowing through there might be deductions on there that you might get benefit for. If there's literally nothing on the K-1, that isn't the reason you're filing your return.
Over the road truck drivers, does my per diem deduction get removed going forward?
No.
Itemizing medical expenses, can you include your health insurance premiums? No. Right, what you're paying for your premiums?
Yes, you can.
Oh, you can?
Yeah. unless you're part of an employer.
Well, this is the good. That's the upside of getting screwed on health insurance.
Well, that's. I mean, there's any number of rules, but as we were talking about earlier with the elderly people with the Medicare and Social Security, there's certain amounts of withheld, and you can those go towards your. Now they got to be in excess of 7.5% of your adjusted gross income.
708. My father-in-law is a permanent resident. Only income was a profit of $8,000 from a stock sale. Does he need to file taxes?
$8,000 from a stock sale, presumably long term, 20%. So he's going to owe that's you know, that's about $1,600 in tax. If he's a permanent resident, he probably wouldn't trip up any kind of a tax liability. So he probably, I mean, in a vacuum, if that's the only fact, then he probably wouldn't need to. That income wouldn't be enough to throw him into the point where he would owe money. So he doesn't necessarily need to file a return.
Van Veld, you got anything? Take your time, Mary. Put those headphones on. We're on the air. Take your time.
Sorry, I was looking up an accident.
Do you have a question? No, you're okay. Yeah, all right, we'll see at the.
Pretty good. I got my return.
We'll see at the audit. Hey. Sandberg?
I have a question about the home office deduction. I actually use our home office, and I don't let the kids in there because I know I was told at one time that the home office has to be just used for work.
It's good to use.
Well, the kids can go in. They just can't work there.
You're not supposed to. It's supposed to be treated as a home office.
Well, you can take my kids to work day. I took them in the office.
My husband uses our bedroom as the home office for him. And so I feel the home office deduction should be increased because it's more space in the house than...
Well, there's so many steps you have to go through, right? To prove it's a home office?
Yeah. I could take pictures.
It's like
him lounging in the bed.
Percentage
of
the square feet of your house or something?
Do you painting with a very broad brush, you don't want to do that. Because there's no way that you'd have to bifurcate the time, right? I mean, you do use your bedroom for some non-business. You're sleeping. You'd have to figure out how many hours a day. Then you'd have to break it up. As a general...
What if you sleep at work?
Well, make sure you sleep in the other office.
Yeah.
I mean, the home office deduction is a little bit difficult for a couple of reasons. If I'd have to be honest, I typically try to steer people. I mean, in some instances, it's great, but you know, the situation is you're effectively, no pun intended, you're mortgaging the future because you get a certain deduction. There's certain if it's 1/10 of your house, easy math, you're going to get some depreciation. You're going to get some benefit. Now, when you sell that house, if you're married, you get $500,000 of appreciation that's tax free. Not if you have a home office. If you bought it for $2,000 and sold it for $3,000. That's only $100,000. You don't typically have to pay tax, but any depreciation you took, you have to grab it back, and that's ordinary income. So it's just a timing thing. And that's not to say it's not good for everybody, but that's important to know.
We're going to continue to pepper you with questions off the air for our own benefit. But last thing, people filing extensions now, what do they need to do?
The most important thing to remember is you get an automatic 6 months to October 15th. It's an extension of time to file, not an extension of time to pay. So you need to try to figure out as best you can what you owe. You pay that in, and you file the extension again by Tuesday, April 17th.
Yeah, and it's easy to file. It's a one-pager.
It's very easy, and you can do it electronically in most instances, and probably should.
Okay. You know,
yeah.
Nice to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for the help. I'm sorry you have to go back to work now.
It's his championship week.
It's Lewis Sands. It's Sickich, the accounting firm in Naperville. They do wonderful work, and Lewis does as well, and we always appreciate your help.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.